Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. ESPN Plus shares some new numbers with us. A drought has fallen on the Africa Cup of Nations. Fox cements a World Cup deal with Twitter. Which soccer TV channels are losing the biggest percentage of subscribers? Why does the FA Cup upset MLS writers so? And finally, we share our recommendations of what to watch this weekend. On the panel today, we have Kartik Krishnayar. My name is Christopher Harris. So, Kartik, it's Thursday. We're recording this, and we just published one of your new stories today that was focused on WarnerMedia, which is, owns Turner Sports. And they're definitely interested in Major League Soccer rights. For you, what were some of the interesting things that came out of it?
Yeah, we know WarnerMedia made a pretty attractive bid to the Premier League, right? Very recently, appears they were possibly the high bidder, actually. But NBC, the incumbent, NBC Universal, the incumbent, maintained the rights. And WarnerMedia has put a lot of money now into acquisitions, potential money. They've acquired NHL rights. MLS rights, or their portion of the package, should go for about the same or maybe a little less than the NHL rights. So that's a potentially less expensive acquisition that gives them a lot of content. It gives them a lot of content which doesn't conflict with the NBA and NHL at times, which are their two kind of bread and butter things, along with Major League Baseball. The thing that's very attractive about Turner, I think, from MLS's standpoint, is they show no college football, which we know has been the biggest bugaboo for rights holders, right, of soccer in general, not just MLS, but Premier League rights holders for other European leagues, is the conflicts with college football. They don't show any college basketball outside the NCAA men's basketball tournament, which, of course, they have co-exclusive rights with CBS for, so there are a lot of basketball games, particularly Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sundays during March and early April on Turner networks. But other than that, the programming conflicts are light. There's Major League Baseball, which does go through the summer and is shown primarily on TBS, not on TNT. And I think that that gives them the opportunity to show the League's Cup in English, for example, during the middle of the summer, and maybe show the entire tournament, the entire English language rights. I think that there is the opportunity for them to use their streaming services, be it HBO Max or BR Live, for other MLS matches, for local MLS matches, as well as MLS Next Pro, and maybe a select MLS Next match here and there. So there's a lot of content that that's given to them. Now, the conflict, of course, would be in May and June with the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NBA playoffs, right, that are going to be on TNT and Turner and HBO Max with the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. They may not have as much bandwidth during that period, and Major League Baseball has started at that point. But in terms of the conflicts with football, they don't show the NFL, they don't show college football, and we have had, I think, just for this sport in general, the greatest conflict has been with college football and programming time, having to schedule around college football. Also, last thing, Turner does not show very much golf anymore, and they show no tennis. So the golf is down to opening rounds of the PGA Championship and some other assorted one-off things throughout the year, and tennis is not on the network at all. So they don't have the programming conflicts that even, for example, USA does now for Premier League matches, with a lot of the inventory from NBCSN going to USA.
Yeah, overall, this is a very kind of tantalizing proposition here, that Major League Soccer might get into partnership with Warner Media. Of course, I'm sure there's going to be other players too, especially on the Spanish language side. But what Warner Media does offer, like you said, Kartik, is a lot of TV options. The one side of the thing, the side of the fence that they're a little bit weak on, is on the online side. So BR Live, which is now defunct, BR Live, if you go to BR Live, it redirects to the Bleacher Report website. And BR Live in the last year or so was mostly, I think, AEW wrestling. So mostly wrestling on there. They had gotten rid of all of their soccer properties. And it's one of those things. So there's HBO Max. So HBO Max will be adding hockey in the near future. And on the soccer side, there's a good opportunity to add sports there. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. I mean, they're definitely one of the contenders. 2 years ago, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, for a conference. And there, MLS had been in talks with Turner at that time to kind of set the wheels in motion and see if there's an opportunity. So, so yeah, there's definitely a lot more detail in Kartik's article at worldsoccertalk.com. And it's quite interesting. I think definitely Warner Media could certainly give Major League Soccer kind of a different look and feel. The big question at the end of the day for a lot of European soccer fans is the level of coverage. I mean, it was kind of up and down, a roller coaster ride for the UEFA Champions League. Could they put together a package or kind of some talent that would be worthy of Major League Soccer? I certainly hope so. I mean, they're a large enough organization, but a lot of that depends on who's driving the production. And I mean, do they have experience in soccer? They probably would have to hire someone from the outside or go with someone inside. And if it's someone inside, they may not have that soccer experience. So all in all, should be one to watch over the next few weeks. So Major League Soccer is expected to make the announcement by the end of the first quarter in terms of who will get the rights. Warner Media certainly has a play. Nothing guaranteed until those bids come in and agreements are done. So a long way to go still. All right, Kartik, let's move on to into the news segment, because there's a lot of news this week, and we'll get back to kind of our recommended matches to watch shortly. But let's talk about the TV streaming news side of things, and I'll have you kick it off since we've got so much to cover.
Yeah, a new report by Nielsen, which was published in Sports Business Journal, showed us a number of households for channels that number of household channels that broadcast soccer in. ESPN and ESPN2 were dropped by 4% in subscriber numbers, while FS1 had about a 2% drop in the past 2 years, the last 24 months. And NBCSN had a similar drop. They're gone now, of course. So we're seeing more cord cutters. We're seeing more people also that aren't necessarily cutting the cord, but are consolidating, right? They're getting rid of the sports pack, or they're getting rid of extraneous channels, even if they're keeping cable. So that's affecting channels that broadcast soccer pretty dramatically. And in terms of CBS Sports Network, which is not a Nielsen-rated channel, they are not in as many homes as these other channels we're talking about. So that's an even more worrying place, actually, in some senses.
Yeah, and some of the numbers, just go through them real quickly too. So ESPN and ESPN2 are in 79 million homes. USA Network and FS1 are in 78 million homes. And it's actually about the same as NBCSN. It used to be that USA Network, up until very recently, Kartik, was in far more homes than NBCSN, roughly between 5 and 10 million. Now, where NBCSN left off and is now gone, but at the end of December, and where USA Network is, they're about the same, but that's 78 million homes, which is the same as FS1. FS2 is in 60 million homes. TUDN, 36 million homes. Fox Deportes, 18 million homes. beIN Sports on the English language side, and ESPN Deportes, 13 million homes. And then beIN Sports in Espanol, 8 million homes. Out of all those, one of the ones, actually the two networks that had the biggest decrease in number of subscribers were ESPN Deportes. They lost roughly 6 million subscribers. And then beIN Sports en Español, which lost about 2.5 million subscribers. So there's, I mean, the irony is that beIN Sports en Español gets the far greater TV ratings than beIN Sports, the English language channel, even though beIN Sports is in almost double the amount of homes. ESPN Deportes, that number keeps on dropping. But it's important that they keep a Spanish language station channel among its reach and properties that ESPN has.
Yeah, there's also another interesting thing I have to say on the positive is that through the course of the last 5 years or so, Fox has made an effort to get FS2, which was at one point in the high 40s, low 50 million in terms of households, up. They're at 60 million now, which is still significantly lower than the two ESPN1 and ESPN2, as well as FS1. But the gap between FS1 and FS2 in terms of subscribers is not, this is the lowest it's actually ever been.
Yeah, FS2... I don't know about you, Kartik. I can't even remember the last time I watched FS2. It probably would have been last summer for the Gold Cup, perhaps. What about you?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not conscious of whether I'm watching FS1 or FS2, to be honest with you, if I'm watching Fox.
Does that mean you're not watching it?
No, that means I might have watched it yesterday. I don't know. I can't tell you. I know when I've watched a Fox broadcast. I'm just not conscious of whether I'm watching it on... for me, channel 219 or channel 618. 618 is FS2 for me on right. DirecTV, and 219 is FS1. I think I watched it. I don't know. The Arab Cup, that was on
FS1 and FS2. Yeah, both of them.
So I don't know which one I watched, which matches on, honestly.
That's interesting, though, too. That's really interesting to me is that, you mean, it's a Fox. You're just watching it on Fox. It doesn't matter whether it's Big Fox, FS1, FS2. That's really interesting. So let's move on to the next news item, and that's Fubo. Fubo's been busy in the news this week. Fubo TV, the streaming platform, ended 2021 with a record 1.1 million subscribers. In comparison, Peacock has 20 million active users, but 1.1 million subscribers for Fubo is a big deal for them. Also, today they announced a deal. So Fubo TV in Canada has acquired the rights to the English Premier League starting in August of 2022. Previously, DAZN had the rights to that league, and DAZN will go ahead and show the rest of this season in Canada. Speaking of DAZN this week is going through with a purchase of BT Sport in the UK for, in US dollars, roughly $800 million. What I'm hearing from one of my sources is that with DAZN losing the Premier League in Canada and not having much properties or much rights available in the US, I mean, they have some fights now and again, but it's very rare. Is that DAZN is looking at potentially exiting the US and Canadian markets and then really kind of concentrating more on Europe. In Italy, they're huge with Serie A rights and now having the rights, actually basically taking over BT Sport, they're going to be occupied quite a bit with things happening in Europe as opposed to North America.
In addition, they forked over a ton of money for the Bundesliga, maybe too much money, in my opinion, for Bundesliga domestic rights, which they split with Sky now in Germany, was completely on Sky prior to that. So they have put a lot of money into Europe. One quick note about the Peacock number, Chris. This number, by the way, I saw the number and it was eye-popping to me. My understanding is that it includes people who are Comcast subscribers that are using Peacock. It's not just people who've signed up for Peacock as a standalone service. So I was a little confused when I got the news release.
Yeah. No, that makes total sense because actually Peacock, I think, says the number of subscribers they have is much greater than that. But then they say, okay, number of active users, 20 million. And that could be, like you said, a lot of it could be Comcast users watching Peacock programming through their Comcast box. Or like you and me, who are watching Peacock for Premier League matches now and again. Speaking of this weekend, too, actually, Peacock, they've got the Chelsea Man City game and the Spurs Arsenal game. And actually, next week, I think they have Brentford against Man United. And then the weekend after that, they got Man United against West Ham. So there's a lot of games coming on Peacock that are exclusive to them.
That's fine by me because, again, as I pointed out before, and again, if you don't have Peacock, then it's a problem. But they, for whatever reason, do a more thorough job with the bumper coverage around the matches if it's on Peacock than if it's on USA or NBC. I don't know why. Maybe there's no set time limit and commercial breaks are less frequent. But they seem to go more in depth on those shows around the coverage. I mean, the match coverage is the same, but in and around the matches. For some reason, NBC seems to put more effort when the matches are on Peacock.
Do you remember a few years ago, Kartik, when Alexi Lalas tweeted out that said, what did he say? He said, if you're not watching Major League Soccer, you're not a soccer fan in the United States. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, I remember that well.
Well, in some ways, it's like if you're a soccer fan in the United States in 2022, if you don't have ESPN Plus, Peacock, and Paramount Plus, are you really a soccer fan? Because in terms of the amount of content and games that they have on those three channels alone, I mean, and tons of other stuff too, I mean, that's the majority of the soccer games these days.
Yeah, and I have to say, we skipped the segment where what we watched this week, but I'm now getting more, just more kind of partial to streaming. So let me tell you this, we're recording this Thursday morning. What happened to me Wednesday afternoon? I had a political project I was working on, so I couldn't watch the Spanish Supercopa semifinals or the Italian Supercopa live. I DVR both. One is on CBS Sports Network, the other is on ESPN or ESPN2. Guess what? One match goes to they both go to extra time and one match goes to penalties. Both DVR recordings of mine cut off before the matches were decided. Now, if I had been watching the matches on stream, which I suppose I could do, right? They must be archived on Paramount Plus and ESPN yep. Plus also, so I guess I could do it. But I hadn't thought about that. I would have not had this issue. So I had added a half an hour to both recordings, knowing that they might go into extra time because they're elimination matches. But there was some sort of stoppage time. There was extended stoppage time, I think, in the Real Madrid-Barcelona match at the end of regular time, at the end of the second half, that then pushed the extra time recording past 2 hours and 30 minutes. And then with CBS with Italy, it went into the winner was in what, the 120th mm-hmm. plus minute, and my DVR had cut off.
Well, that sucks. I mean, and that's happened to me before too, Kartik, probably about 10 years ago, right? I mean, but it just goes to show we're in 2022 and that's still an issue with DVRs and, you mean, whether it's cable or kind of your traditional, you mean, cable or satellite networks. But what I did actually was a little bit different this week. I watched the Italian Super Cup at the same time I was watching the League Cup and at the same time I was watching the Spanish Supercopa. But the first half of the Italian Super Cup I watched on CBS Sports Network. And the picture quality was so bad. I actually took a screen grab of it and posted on Twitter at World Soccer Talk. It was glitchy. It looked like it was a video game that had like a bug in it. It was just really glitchy. So for the second half, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to watch it on Paramount Plus. And the picture quality was far, far more superior on Paramount Plus than it was on CBS Sports Network. Of course, there's a ton of different variables involved in why that is so in terms of the CBS Sports Network not having a good picture quality. But that was just my experience this week. A couple more news items to get to, Kartik. I'm not sure if you saw this, but I'll have you talk about it. But Fox and Twitter have announced a deal. Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. Again, Twitter has been really aggressive in terms of marketing itself for highlights, etc., and clips. So they've announced a partnership with Fox Sports to air World Cup highlights for both the 2022 men's and 2023 women's World Cups. They had obviously done this in 2018 and 2019, and it is actually, I think, something that will really drive more traffic to Twitter, as we saw in 2018 and 2019. There will also be analysis and interactive Q&As, which are available via Twitter Spaces, which is something I've been using lately, by the way. And it's even if you have a small audience, you get a lot of interaction with people. Kind of replace Clubhouse in terms of that. So you also have the ability now to kind of link videos to your own personal Twitter feed, these official videos, and share highlights and clips, which is a little more robust than it was in 2018 and 2019. So this is a great deal for, I think, both Fox Sports and Twitter. It gets Fox Sports further out there too, and maybe in a way, Chris, serves as some sort of substitute for Fox Sports not having an actual streaming platform. That's kind of what I got from this announcement, that they're trying to find ways to finesse around not having a streaming thing.
Yeah, from what I take from it, it's more about, I mean, they're definitely going to be promoting the Fox Sports app as the place to go to watch games. But if you're like me, and you mean you're a soccer fan, and maybe you don't watch as many other sports, but I had the Fox Sports app. Probably the last time I had it was probably the Women's World Cup. And after that, I deleted it because there's no soccer content on there, or very, very little. So there's no reason for me to go back to it. Now, for the World Cup, then, yeah, maybe I'll download the Fox Sports app and then use that if I'm even out of the house and watching it on the road or whatever. This deal was a little bit weird, though, Kartik, because at the end of the day, even if they didn't make this announcement, you know that Fox Soccer, the Twitter handle, would be tweeting out goal highlights anyway of from all the games. But this one, to me, sounds like and feels more like a kind of an advertising partnership deal where Fox and Twitter have made an agreement, and maybe there's a revenue share deal as part of this. But to make a big, big splash to say, hey, Twitter's the place to go to for highlights of goals as they're scored in the World Cup. And then behind the scenes, Fox and Twitter work out some type of deal where they cross-promote each other. And it's beneficial for both companies, both monetarily and as far as reach. I had a question on Twitter from somebody, too, and they said, okay, well, what does this mean for YouTube? Will Fox Sports have highlights of goals on YouTube from games? At the end of the day, will they have the highlights package on there, too? Most probably, yes, but they haven't announced anything. And then the other thing, too, in this press release from Fox and Twitter is that the first quote in the press release is from one of Fox's gambling executives. So I think this is also a play for Fox Sports to really kind of push their Fox Bet product in the faces of soccer fans where gambling is legal in whichever states it's legal in. And there might be kind of ads for Fox Bet. And maybe there's a revenue share deal there too between Twitter and Fox. So it's interesting pulling this one apart. But yeah, the World Cup's coming, and Twitter's definitely a place to go to for the goal highlights for sure. And this week too, Kartik, Kyle did a story. He interviewed one of the executives from ESPN Plus, actually John Lasker, who we interviewed a few years ago. And writing about ESPN Plus and trying to get to the heart of some of the numbers, we know that they have a lot of soccer coverage, but what does that mean? Like, how many hours do they do a year? So we got Kyle got some really good insight. The article's at worldsoccertalk.com, but just a few highlights. And of course, you can read the whole article for more details. but in 2021, ESPN streamed more than 22,000 live events, which that number is staggering when you think about it in terms of even just the operation, just going to ESPN Plus and just seeing the amount of different things happening live. 22,000 live events, more than that in 2021. Of those 22,000, 5,400 were soccer matches. Now, I think about 50% of those probably end up being college soccer games, which is nothing wrong with that. There's a ton of college soccer content on there, but still, even if you take half of that, so if you say like 2,600 or 2,700 live professional soccer games, that's more than Paramount Plus. That's just a staggering number once again. And then the busiest day that they had in 2021, they had 152 live events. You can just imagine behind the scenes all the programming and all the people that are running around trying to make these things possible. And last but not least, 2021 featured more than 1,030 hours of soccer-focused studio shoulder programming. So pre-match, halftime, post-match, as well as ESPN FC, and then some of their other shows, definitely on the Spanish language side, they've got a bunch of different news shows. So, so I think it's been a good year for ESPN Plus, and they're pushing to make 2022 an even better year. Kartik, from this past weekend, did you get a chance to watch any of the FA Cup coverage on ESPN Plus, and what were your thoughts on that?
I mean, it was pretty straightforward. They showed all the games, which was great, right? But beyond that, I mean, it was really straightforward. There were no there was no kind of bumper programming. Although they did a really good job, I think, in and around a couple of other things in this last week, right? The League Cup semifinal matches, the Spanish Supercopa. We got access to all of the matches, which was fantastic. I mean, the thing that I thought was really really useful this weekend was the ability to, for those of us again who have Apple TV, who have the quad box, so to speak, to kind of focus on multiple matches at once, and that ended up kind of driving us towards matches that maybe would not have been the highlighted match in the past. So we got to see all the cup sets, so to speak, in a way that when Fox had the rights and they were showing matches on FS1 and FS2, and they would just pick up the international feed for these matches, and we wouldn't see the other matches that we would never see.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite weekends this year. It almost always is. Not every year. Sometimes, like in a few years ago, maybe 2 years ago, it seemed like the FA Cup third round was in jeopardy. It just seemed to be that there was like hardly any fans in the stadium. There was not much to talk about in terms of the games. It was a little bit scary because we were not used to that. But this past weekend was probably one of my favorite weekends of FA Cup weekends in quite a while. You had so many good games on. I'm not going to go down the list, but huge upsets, tons of goals. And what I was doing, because there is no whip-around show and there is no halftime show, is that I would listen to TalkSport Radio for the radio commentary, and then they would say, hey, huge things happening here at Kidderminster. And then I would, same as you, Kartik, I had the quad box, so the multicast feature was a multi-view feature on Apple TV for ESPN Plus, where you can watch four games at once. And then I would look at the Kidderminster Reading game and go, oh my gosh, look at that goal. I can't believe it. Amazing. So I was able to really kind of just experience the FA Cup in its full glory. And I loved it. I thought it was really, really good. Big crowds, good games, and thoroughly entertaining. The interesting thing for me, Kartik, though, is that, well, two interesting things. First of all, we had all 32 games live available to us at our fingertips on our TVs or computers or whatever device you're using. In comparison, in the UK, where the FA Cup is being played, only six of those games were available on television all weekend. We had 32. The other thing I always find it interesting, and I always find it kind of weird, Kartik, and I want to get your take on it, on this, is you hardly ever see any MLS journalists talking about the FA Cup on social media. And what is it about the FA Cup that silences MLS journalists for the most part? What do you think? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, because you have lower division teams and non-league teams challenging top division and second division teams, and that there seems to be some sort of inherent view in the U.S. that closed leagues and closed structures are superior, and that only big markets, only cities that have, you know, there shouldn't be a team from Omaha upsetting teams from New York, right? That I think that there's a very elite view of that. And so that's probably it. I mean, I do find it kind of curious, because I don't like playoffs, as I've articulated on here before, and I really don't like the Champions League. I think, you know, I haven't said it that directly in the past, but I'm sitting watching the Championship in, you know, League One in England or something else, or during Champions League match days often in midweek. So I don't like knockout competitions, because I think they're crapshoots. The knockout competitions I do like are open competitions, which everybody qualifies for, and then anybody can beat anybody else. And the matches can be in any venue. That I like. I like open competitions. This is an open competition. The FA Cup is an open cup, so to speak. The League Cup is not, right? The League Cup is just professional clubs. So maybe that's what they don't like. They object to that, or they just are so focused on leagues and the business side of it. I don't know. I don't have an explanation. I have some theories, and I think the open side of it, the fact that you have non-league clubs upsetting clubs that are in the first and second divisions, is something that they don't really typically embrace. Mm-hmm. And it's done in a way where those clubs don't lose money. So we have an open cup in the United States, but as I often say, as someone who's worked extensively in lower division soccer, both professional lower divisions and adult amateur lower divisions, it's a loss leader. If you go out and you upset a USL or MLS team, chances are you're going to lose money on it. And then you're going to have to do a GoFundMe to travel to the next match, because U.S. soccer doesn't make it financially attractive the way the FA does here. You get a cut of the ticket revenue. You get a cut right of everything. So maybe all of that is offensive to them, because it's very much contrary to the way things are done in this country.
Yeah, no, I think the U.S. Open Cup could be something that's more successful in the future, but I think it needs investment from U.S. Soccer Federation, whether it's taking 1% of the money that they spend on lawyer fees and then putting that towards the competition and actually subsidizing it, offering, you mean, paying for travel or whatever it takes to make it a really bigger event that we can be proud of. We're proud of it, but it's gotten really pushed to the side. I mean, the last couple of years, because of COVID, it hasn't been played. It's coming back this year. But what makes this year any different than previous years? And the struggles that you mentioned, Kartik, as far as clubs not being able to afford travel or just trying to figure out a way to be able to actually compete in the tournament financially, where they don't lose money, it's difficult. So speaking of other cup competitions too, we have the Africa Cup of Nations that started last weekend. A lot of controversy about this one, because the games on the weekends are on beIN Sports Extra, which is their free channel, which is available on Pluto TV, Roku channel, and a ton of other places. And because it's a free channel, much like Pluto, if you watch any programming on Pluto, you mean usually every 10 minutes it's going to a commercial break. Well, Africa Cup of Nations, we're watching the game, and then 10 minutes into the game, we go to commercial during the game. It's not a good look for beIN Sports, especially in terms of how they value this tournament and even what it says about the Africa Cup of Nations. However, if you do want to watch the games and you don't want to have the commercial breaks on weekends, the other option is to watch it on beIN Sports Connect. They do have a feed on there that doesn't have any commercials. However, that feed has a commentary that's only in Arabic. So if you don't mind turning down the volume and just watching the game, or turning it up a little bit and hearing the crowd noise, but there's no commercials on those. Africa Cup of Nations, Kartik, so far it's a drought. I mean, unfortunately, the number of goals scored per game, the average is 1.0. And I think for the Gold Cup, after the first nine games, I think it was about 2.6 goals per game.
Oh, wow.
And then the Euro 2020 was, I think, 2.4 goals per game. So the Africa Cup of Nations, a lot of nil-nils or 1-0s. It hasn't been the most exciting tournament thus far, unfortunately. All right, let's see. So we've gone through all the news. And before we move on to the listener mailbag, let's talk about our matches to watch this weekend. I'll have you go first, Kartik.
Yeah, Dortmund-Freiburg on Friday, ESPN Plus, the Friday night Bundesliga match, 2:30 p.m. or 2:20 p.m. actually, Eastern time. Dortmund now back within 6 points of Bayern after Bayern lost to Gladbach, which is an annual event now. Bayern has some sort of I haven't seen a bogey team complex quite like this in a while, where Bayern struggles against Gladbach irrespective of circumstances. I know they had some guys out with COVID last week, but that's for the last 3 years or so. I mean, my theory is Marco Rose got the Dortmund job because he kept beating Bayern at Gladbach. So Dortmund now within 6 points. Freiburg in contention for a European spot as well. So this is a very big match, and I think it's if Dortmund can push on, having come from behind against Eintracht on Saturday, maybe they can make this a title race.
Yeah, Freiburg is a good team. I always enjoy watching them. Even the last few years, they've always been kind of an attacking team that never gave up. And yeah, I've been impressed by them for sure. So I'm going to cheat a little bit on my what to watch this weekend. This game is actually on Tuesday. And Kartik, this is the hipster derby. This is St. Pauli against Borussia Dortmund in the DFB Pokal.
Yes.
2:45 Eastern time. It's on ESPN 3 and I believe ESPN Deportes. The only sad thing about this, Kartik, is probably, you know, in Germany, right? There's probably going to be no fans in the stadium, because if there was St. Pauli against Dortmund, I mean, that's a dream come true as far as two of the most hipster German clubs.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's that is a legitimate hipster derby, right? The commercially really successful hipster team versus the hipster team that's the inspiration for all the other hipster teams around the world.
All right. Well, if they had fans in that stadium, it would be just intense.
I mean, in all seriousness, you know, as I'm going through this local soccer TV project that we talked about a few weeks ago on the podcast, if I actually kept a tally of what clubs in Europe inspire the people who are running clubs in the U.S., St. Pauli would come out ahead of Manchester United, ahead of Liverpool. It's amazing how many people in the United States who get interested in the sport or want to do something very grassroots and local and community oriented in the sport look to that club first before they look to any other club. Amazing.
Well, especially kind of the most hipster U.S. club is what, Detroit City?
Yes.
And that's the St. Pauli, I mean, definitely inspired by them.
Right. Oh, totally.
Right. All right. Listen to the mailbag. First up is Chris, and he talks about the transition from NBCSN to USA Network. Chris says, when it comes to USA's Premier League coverage, I am in agreement with you guys that there is no difference in coverage between USA and NBCSN. I will say that I have seen more ads both on TV and on social media telling people that the new home for the Premier League is USA Network. I've been watching a lot more Ligue 1 games this season and have found the games and atmosphere to be entertaining as a neutral. However, the fan violence isn't a good look for the league, especially when it comes to selling media rights in the next few years. Yeah, and Ligue 1 should be up for bids in the next couple of years, too. For me, yeah, I do not want fan violence, but to me, it definitely creates sometimes a really good atmosphere, a really tense, charged atmosphere. And I mean, it's kind of, you don't want fan violence to get out of control, definitely not. But when there is fans, home and away fans, the chanting, the singing, and the passion, that does come through the TV set, and it is exciting to watch. And sometimes for the players, it helps them move up to the next level too. You see the difference between players playing in an empty stadium versus players playing in a packed stadium, where the fans are kind of, you mean, whether giving them some pressure or shouting, or sometimes it does affect players. But yeah, as far as the advertising goes, Chris, same here. I've seen a ton of advertising. NBC, that's one thing that they always do a great job on is really getting the word out there through advertising. And it seems like with Fox and ESPN sometimes too, I just don't see as much advertising when I go online to different sites, kind of pushing whatever soccer games that they have. Next up, talking about Major League Soccer coverage in local markets and sometimes how it's hard to actually find games, even though you have ESPN Plus and you subscribe to that. So this is from Anonymous, and he says, to the Colorado Rapids fan who wrote in last week, I'm a diehard New York Red Bulls fan who lives 6 miles from Red Bull Arena and has evaded the geo-blocking on ESPN Plus for the last 2 seasons. I use NordVPN on my Amazon Fire-enabled TV and have had minimal issues watching matches. I've used it here in North Jersey, as well as on vacation in Mexico and the Dominican Republic. I haven't tried it for the NHL games on ESPN Plus, but I would hope that it works too. I recommend my VPN, but there are plenty of other good VPNs to choose from. And if you do your research, most of them have a discount code for new subscribers. I'd recommend starting with a free trial just before the season begins. And if it doesn't work for whatever reason, you can get a refund. And that's one of the big issues, too, that hopefully this next MLS TV deal will avoid. And that is the whole local issue about local market rights and fans living sometimes not 6 miles from the stadium, but sometimes 60 miles or 600 miles and being blacked out or geo-blocked from actually watching their local team, even though they're actually outside of that or pretty far away from that area. So hopefully the next TV deal will take care of that. Speaking of Major League Soccer, Roberto says, an aspect of the improving MLS situation is the number of teams with academies. This should help improve the qualities of those teams. Unfortunately, like we saw in the Premier League, the hard work to cultivate young players is for naught when they go to richer teams. Many Premier League teams have closed their academies. Daryl DK came to Major League Soccer through college, whereas Ricardo Pepi came through Dallas's academy. Dallas may see this as a way to make money, but that action means their level of play is not good enough to be a top team in the league. Pepi is not ready for the Bundesliga and will probably ride the bench. The MLS needs to stop selling young American players and then signing players from South America. For the league to grow, more support, it needs to keep American stars by paying them serious money. So Kartik, like a Ricardo Pepi, so certainly the offer from Augsburg to sign him, Major League Soccer loves that amount of money, like what, the $20 million. But what if FC Dallas offered Pepi the same type of wages in MLS versus what he'd be making in Augsburg? Do you think he'd still make that move?
Yeah, because I think it's about being in Europe. It's testing yourself against the best competition. It's being in the shop window for an ultimately bigger move. So I don't know that it always comes down to money. And there's the assumption by some people that it does, but I don't think it does. Now, in the case of Pepi moving to Augsburg, it's a risk. Augsburg is fighting relegation, and they have some very good attacking players already. I mean, that was what really struck me, was that he was going to a team where I'm not sure he's going to move into the lineup quickly, because their problem hasn't been attacking. Their problem has been leaking goals at the back at times, although I think they're good enough to stay in the league. But being good enough to stay in the league may require them not to bleed in a young attacking player until next season. So yeah, and I think in terms of academies, they're great, but I also think that the idea that some people have now that, hey, ignore the college game is pretty stupid. This is one place where I completely agree with Alexi Lalas. There are a lot of players who get caught in the cracks and they develop later. They're not at elite youth academies. They may develop in college. They might be seen in college. And we have a lot of guys who played college soccer who have been very successful. I mean, one scored twice in the Premier League last week, Jack Harrison. played at Wake Forest, let's not forget. So I never write off college soccer, and great point by Roberto. DK went that route and now is at West Brom permanently.
And then next up is Drew talking about La Liga. When people talk about Barcelona not being what it used to be, it's worth remembering that the club was utterly wrecked by Bartomeu to the point of being more than $1 billion, $1 billion in debt. Barcelona is a team that is operating under a strict salary cap, and a lot of their squad is made up of young players who are growing as footballers. They can't go out and spend whatever they want on players like City and PSG. In North American sports, what Barcelona is going through wouldn't be too out of the ordinary, as even giants like the Patriots and Lakers sometimes miss the playoffs. But since Barcelona supporters are used to seeing Barcelona win every year, they get surprised by the results and press the panic button. No team should have a preordained spot at the top of their league, as if they were football royalty. And seeing Barcelona turn to their academy players to climb back to the top instead of outspending their rivals like before is refreshing, to say the least. And Andrew, I don't mean to laugh, but it's more an issue with Barcelona and the hierarchy making really poor decisions. This is one of the biggest clubs in the world, and they've definitely made so many mistakes. The situation that they're currently in is a result of their poor decisions. So, yes, teams kind of come and go in terms of some teams sometimes are always, I mean, Manchester United were winning the league every year and then they kind of dropped off, but they're still in contention there. But the drop off with Barcelona from what they were just a couple of years ago to now in terms of their playing level is a huge drop off. And a lot of that is because of the way the club has been run. And a lot of that is because of the financial issues, overspending, overpaying, making some really dumb decisions. Kartik, do you have anything to add here?
I think that the reality on the Barcelona issue is that Barcelona is, if anything, being cut breaks at this point by La Liga. Because what's happened is Barcelona has so wildly overspent and is in such a precarious financial position that they can't get a low-interest loan really anywhere. At any bank in Spain, most banks in the United States, they've gotten another loan now. That's how they were able to afford buying Ferran Torres. And they haven't been able to register him yet. But the for La Liga competition, right? They could register him for other competitions. La Liga has actually cut Barcelona breaks because they are not anywhere near being in compliance with the salary cap. But La Liga's been like, okay, if you're making progress, if we see you're trimming payroll, if we see you're getting towards the recommended or actually the required spending limits, then we're going to cut you some slack. So I have no sympathy for Barcelona right now. I have very little sympathy for Barcelona supporters, who have also been nothing but condescending to clubs that they feel are plastic clubs with plastic fans, right? And or don't play football the right way. I mean, it's all coming. It's what goes around comes around, is the way I view it.
Yeah, and don't forget, too, that Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Juventus are the three clubs that still are trying to make the European Super League a thing. Everyone else, you mean, kind of wised up and listened to the fans. Those three clubs are still trying to put it together and trying to figure out a way. And it really is, you mean, Juventus and Barcelona in huge financial issues. I mean, it's really motivated by money. They're just trying to figure out, okay, if we do European Super League, that'll give us some big funding from some of these American banks, and that'll keep us afloat a little bit longer, or might help us in terms of the transfer market.
Barcelona, partly because of their, and like, I mean, I think most of our listeners know I'm actually to the left politically, but I will say this about the left. Because the left in Europe is so in love with Barcelona and the Catalan thing, Barcelona has been given so many breaks, I think, in terms of the way they've been covered, that they have run a bad business for 10 or 15 years and not been called to account for it. I mean, I can imagine if some other clubs with owners from Thailand or from the United States or wherever were conducting their business and operating the way Barcelona were, and with the arrogance and the seeming indifference to everything else going on, what the coverage would have been like. So yeah. I don't have any sympathy for them at all. And actually, I'm getting more put out by their supporters over the last 6 months than I ever have before. I mean, they just they whine and they have this sense of entitlement and this sense that this grievance against the rest of us that is and I guess it manifested itself in the Super League. You're right, Chris. That would probably be where it all came out.
I would add, though, too, but I do see a line between the business side of things, how the club has been run, and then kind of the footballing philosophy side of sides, which is, I mean, playing the game in a beautiful manner and in terms of having kind of a philosophy of playing the game. And it, even going back to Johan Cruyff, and kind of the Dutch influence. So the way that they play the game and what they stand for on the footballing side, I mean, not that it's the only way, but that's something
I
believe
in. But for years, Barcelona fans would be like, how can Atletico Madrid play, how can Simeone play the way he does against us? It's not football, it's not right, blah, blah, blah. Now that Atleti has greater resources than Barcelona, maybe they would have a point, but at the time they had everything stacked in their favor, and Atletico did. I'm just using Atletico as an example because I heard that over and over from Barcelona fans about how sinister and cynical Simeone was in particular. And now they see what it's like to be a club that doesn't have unlimited resources and has to manage their finances. Maybe they can't play football in the fashion they want to. We'll see. I mean, I think with Xavi, they probably will play football that way, but you know, you never know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it just goes to show, Kartik, it's like when you're at the top, it just can enjoy it, right? Because Manchester United fans, for the longest time, you know, were just winning everything, it seemed, year after year. Barcelona, too, I mean definitely close with Real Madrid, back and forth, but still winning trophies every season. And sometimes things change financially, decisions, whether it's even ownership with United and lack of spending, or again, poor decisions in the transfer market, poor leadership, etc. So, yeah. Oh. All right, last but not least, Bobby Drake has a question for us. And Kartik, this is probably up your alley a lot more. Why don't Premier League champion teams that win the Premier League, why don't they wear a crest indicating their defending status? In fact, I think only the NBA and UEFA do this during normal campaigns. Strange that no other sport does it. I could be wrong. Kartik, what do you think?
Well, actually, Bobby, they do. So Manchester City this year is wearing a lion crest on their sleeve, which is gold, rather than just a regular kind of monochrome or gray crest that the other 19 clubs will wear. So that's an indicative that they're the champion. That's a tradition going back to, I think the Premier League started it sometime in the mid-2000s. MLS has something similar to a Scudetto that you wear. Obviously, Serie A does. So some leagues do it. The Premier League, it's very subtle. If you don't know about it, actually, I didn't know about it until Manchester City actually won the title the first time. And when I'm ordering my yearly kit, the city shop is like, do you want the gold badge or do you want just a standard Premier League? I'm like, gold badge? What is that? It's the gold badge for the champion. So that's it's something that a lot of people don't know about. But if you go back and watch the clips maybe from the year after Leicester won the title, they were wearing it because that was the first year of the new logo for the Premier League was the season after Leicester won the title, so the 16-17 season, and you could see very clearly they're wearing a gold badge versus everybody else wearing a kind of grayish badge, or not gray, actually silver gray. Yeah, it's kind of that color.
I did not know that, Kartik. I learned something new. And of course, with Swansea City never winning the Premier League, from personal experience, I haven't had the chance to look at my club sleeve and go, like, wait, there's a gold, something, a gold crest.
Like there. Like I said, I wouldn't have known. I had no idea. Actually, I'll tell you the story. We were doing an event at an indoor soccer futsal event for NASL one Saturday night. And Josh Tomlinson, who you know, right, who's worked with us at World Soccer Talk, who's also a Manchester City fan, came over and told me about this, and like he had gotten the gold badge, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to actually order my crest by my new kit tomorrow, and I ordered it, and like I didn't even know what he meant by gold badge, and this is summer of 2012 after we won the title in dramatic fashion, May of 2012. which was something that I didn't know. By the way, shameless plug here, Gab and Jules this week on their podcast had Guile Clichy on as a special guest, and Clichy talks a lot about that game, that Man City QPR game, and the whole kind of, the whole attitude, the kind of whole mentality around how City came back in that game. So it's, and he talks about his career at Arsenal also in Cannes, but really, really, really a recommended listen if you want to. Gavin Jules this week.
Okay.
Which is obviously via ESPN.
Speaking of podcasts, Kartik, what about this whole Football Weekly thing that's been going on with Christian Pulisic?
Yeah, so I've complained about it. I dubbed it, those of you who follow me on Twitter know that I dubbed it the Pulisic Police a couple of years ago, because anytime you would make any critique of Pulisic, I would even say, like, okay, Pulisic is great going forward, but sometimes he's out of position defensively and he doesn't tuck in and the fullback on his side has problems and it leads to a goal for the team playing Borussia Dortmund. Then you get all these attacks, and then it really intensified when he went to Chelsea, to the point where I ended up getting attacked a lot because I am a huge fan of Mason Mount, and then to the point where I get attacked by City fans also because I compare Mason Mount favorably with Phil Foden. But that's, you know, a legitimate discussion you can have, right? Mount and Pulisic really don't even play the same position. And quite frankly, if anyone thinks Pulisic is as high level a footballer as Mount at this point, I can't help them. But Football Weekly, hosted by Max Rushton, apparently has had such a volume of negative mail towards them, directed towards them. And Max says they've never gotten this much negative mail on any other subject, not Manchester United, not when they criticize Cristiano Ronaldo, not when they criticize Bartomeu in Barcelona, not when they criticize Juventus last season, nothing. You know, not when they criticized at times Liverpool or Chelsea, Chelsea outside of Pulisic. This volume of mail, people accusing them of being anti-American, all of this stuff, that they started a new feature on Football Weekly this week called Pulisic Patrol. And I'm just kind of, even on Twitter, it's like I saw yesterday somebody tweeting like this comparison of how Pulisic is actually kind of implying Pulisic is better than Ziyech and Havertz because he's playing out of position. Quite, I mean, maybe the Americans who tweet about this don't know Havertz's history or Ziyech's history. They're also playing out of position in Tuchel's setup, by the way. Ziyech has not played his natural position. Oh, and then it was also Callum Hudson-Odoi. Callum Hudson-Odoi has not played his natural position since Frank Lampard was sacked.
Yeah, I think part of it is the kind of the need or want of a great American hero, and right now he is that poster boy. He is that guy that a lot of U.S. men's national team fans obsess over. You mean and probably watch every single Chelsea game.
But they're putting added pressure on him is the thing. And then the other thing, Chris, is I'm not sure they're actually watching the games. Just to sorry to cut you off. I think they're watching highlights clips and they see him doing a cute step over, or he takes on a guy. He's a great dribbler and a fantastic finisher. Right, I think he's the best finisher on that Chelsea team other than Lukaku. But there are other flaws in his game that every coach he's had has found. There's a reason why he isn't playing. It's not that Tuchel's anti-American, okay? Or Tuchel has some sort of personal gripe with him. There's a reason he doesn't consistently play where the American fan feels he should play. So I think they're watching clips. I don't think they're watching full games. I think if they watched full games, maybe they would comprehend some of the limitations in his game. Maybe some of the reasons he's not playing, he's not preferred to Mount or Havertz. Actually, he is preferred to Havertz more often than not now. But why he's not preferred to Mount or Hudson-Odoi or Werner at various times.
So one more question before we go, and that is, you mean you having watched him, you mean Dortmund days, Chelsea days, and watching the games very analytically, would you say since he's joined Chelsea, has there been an improvement or a drop-off?
No, he's improved. He's improved for sure. I think his positioning sense is better now. This maybe has come from having to play in unnatural positions, by the way. So there's a value to it, especially with a player who is kind of defensively deficient and is not always aware out of possession, which is something Lampard noticed, by the way, within a month of him getting to Chelsea and playing. He was making kind of strong critiques of Pulisic internally, from what I understand from Chelsea sources, that hey, when you give the ball away, or we give the ball away in midfield, you have to be here. You're not here. You're there. So I think he's gotten better with that. I think he is a better all around player. Now, is he anywhere closer to being an elite player? No. But I think he's more serviceable than he was when he came from Dortmund. So, which may explain where I rated him at the time compared to where other American fans were rating him. I thought that he was a deficient player. I thought he was a player that could not play at an elite level. I now think he is a player that can play at an elite level, like a Park Ji-sung or a Darren Fletcher type that can be, well, and he's not analogous with Fletcher, but I'm just using that as an example. Park Ji-sung, he actually is kind of analogous with. A guy that can be a really good bench player for a top team, a guy that can be a difference maker as a role player for a top team. I didn't think he was even good enough to be that, quite frankly, when he moved over. But he's not at Mason Mount's level. He's not at Lukaku's level. He is not at the level of their two regular wing backs, Chilwell and Reece James. He's not one of the key guys on that team, but he can fit an important role as a role player, as a guy that plays 30 minutes a match, and there's nothing wrong with that. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a legend at Manchester United as a guy who came off the bench and banged in goals. You know, Jermaine Defoe did it for years when he wasn't starting. Clichy, I just mentioned this podcast with Gavin Jules. He talks about Dzeko. He's like, the mentality of Edin Dzeko was he wanted to start, but he knew his role. And we those of us who played with him knew that when he came on, he'd probably score or set up a goal.
Right.
So you have to have that mentality. You know what? I think Pulisic maybe has that mentality. It's the American fan that is so desperate to anoint him that doesn't have the patience or the understanding of what his role is. I mean, we haven't had an American play this significant a role on a big, big club. An American field player at any point. So I think that's McKinney is doing it simultaneously, but an American attacking field player played this big a role on a huge, huge club. So embrace it. I don't know why there has to be all these critiques and this insecurity. And so basically, getting back to the original topic, there were so many American fans that wrote to Guardian Football Weekly when they say things critical of Pulisic or somehow don't put him on the same level they put Lukaku or Jorginho or Conte, that there's some inherent bias, which absolutely isn't the case.
The example you gave of Park Ji-sung is, I think, perfect, because he was that type of impact player that Ferguson would pick and choose the games he would play, and oftentimes the games he would play, especially in the Champions League, it was a difference maker. He was an impact player. It changed the game. It really kind of gave the opposition a headache to try to figure out, okay, right, now how do we figure out how to play against this type of player? So, and that's the thing, Kartik. I mean, in terms of your analysis and reading of the game, I mean, to me, it's at a very, very high level, and it's one of the many kind of attributes of you that is really, really good in terms of really reading the game well and sharing that. Because when I watch a game, I'm watching it differently, right? Like sometimes I'm watching it more from watching the game as it flows, of course, but also watching it from the TV coverage or watching it from like the stadium perspective. A totally different experience than what you're doing. But the two of us together, it ends up being kind of a good partnership there.
Yeah.
All right, listeners. If you have something that you want to ask us, we'd love to read your comment out on air. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Heading into another weekend of football from around the world, lots of big title races still going on. Americans playing in Europe. You've got tons of games. And actually, for me, Kartik, my first Swansea City league game in over a month. The last time they played was December 11th.
Yeah.
And they're playing this weekend, I think, against Huddersfield, which will be a tough game on Saturday.
Very, very tough.
Things to look forward to. And
maybe not to look forward to for you, because when Burnley was playing Huddersfield this past weekend, and I was on TalkSport. They were talking about cup sets. I said, well, that actually, Huddersfield's better than Burnley. I know they're a division lower, so I'm picking Huddersfield. And they won, of course. So,
I know.
That's a tough game, but let me
live
back.
Let me live the dream, though, Kartik. I'm on a high right now to see Swansea play. And actually, last week's recommendations of the Nottingham Forest Arsenal game.
Oh, yeah, spot on.
Oh, yeah. What a game that was. But heading into another weekend, Kartik, what are you going to do and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.